Open your Bibles with me to Matthew 27.
It's ringing in my head about that. Each day I'll do. So thanks for bringing that memory back, Randy. Two quick announcements before we get started. Number one, Justine had mentioned to me this morning, and I didn't get a chance to pass it on, but they are changing Lori's cancer treatment up. Currently, I think she is going to stop the chemotherapy and is meeting with a radiation expert this week to figure out a different plan. It's good news, it seems, but she's going to have to take some type of pill for, I think, the next 10 years to fully get rid of the cancer. Joan's shaking her head yes. I'm thinking that's a good, my information's correct. She's been having a little bit of pain in her legs caused by the chemotherapy, and now she's going to meet with a radiation expert to try to figure out the plan moving forward. So I'm sure Matilda or someone would have a bit more information if you have questions, but that was just some information Justine had asked me to pass on, and I failed to do so. Second piece of announcement is it is the month of September, so y'all know what that means. That means it is test time. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither, and all that he does he prospers. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous, for the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. So I did a count this afternoon. We are up to 19 individuals who have sought me out and have already completed it even before the due date. So extra credit to those people. 10 points to Hufflepuff, I guess. Good job. But given it is September, I will give y'all this week to come see me if you'd like to do it. But then next Sunday, I'm going to start seeking you out and hoping to see how much you have done. If you're struggling, ask me or somebody for help, y'all. There is nothing wrong with saying, Ryan, I just can't do this. Someone may give you some tips that may help you. I, for example, am a visual memorizer. I use something called a memory palace where I visualize, and you can go online and find all types of YouTube videos about memory palaces. It's a Greek idea. But you get different physical places and attach concepts to it. Some people have done songs. I know some people have done various movements with it. Some have just done blunt repetition over and over and over. But talk to somebody and get some help if you're struggling with it, and you'll never know what you may find. But if you'd like to come see me this week, I'd love to see you. But I will be seeking you out starting next week to see how much you have done with Psalm 1. And then we'll go on to moving to memorizing Psalm 119 after that. So. Okay, what we're going to do tonight is talk about the veil of the temple. The veil of the temple. This question came up a few weeks ago in our Wednesday night class, and it was a really good question that I just did not have time to deal with in class. And I thought this is probably a question that may be on your minds as well as we've gone through some of our Leviticus material. My question I want to pose tonight is this: what is the meaning of the tearing of the veil or the curtain? Let me express it this way. If you begin in Matthew chapter 27, beginning in verse 45, this is talking about the crucifixion. There is an event that happens at the crucifixion that really it's an interesting event, and I want us to get to the meaning of it. So let's begin in Matthew chapter 27, Matthew 27, verse 45. Now from the sixth hour, there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, that is, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the bystanders, hearing it, said, this man is calling Elijah. And one of them at once ran and took a sponge, filled it with sour wine, and put it on a reed and gave it to him to drink. But the other said, wait, let us see whether Elijah will save him. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split. You'll notice in verse 51, there's two miraculous events that happen. Number one is the tearing of the curtain. Number two is the shaking of the earth. That is a really interesting event that we'll talk about some other time. That's actually prophesied in Haggai 2, and it's really interesting. But I want to focus on the first part. Behold, the curtain, perhaps your translation may say veil, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Well, what is the meaning of this? So when you get into the life of Christ, what is the actual meaning of this? Now, the meaning that I've heard usually from preachers is whenever the curtain was torn in two, that signified the ending of the old law. So what that signified was Christ was ending the old law. I'll be frank now, that is not what that means. That is not what that means. As we're going to get into the book of Hebrews explicitly tells us what this event means. But I've told you what it doesn't mean. I want you to get that idea out of your head. It's nowhere in Scripture that's what that means. But I want us to then ask, what does this event actually mean? I think given a few of the events that we've been studying in the book of Leviticus, it'll really be neat to see what I think this truly does mean in the spiritual realm. So when you talk about the curtain in the temple, this has a long history in the Old Testament. And I want us to trace three verses that deal with its history. So let's begin in Exodus chapter 26. Exodus chapter 26. The curtain was ordained by God through Moses to rest over the Holy of Holies. Exodus 26, verse 31. Exodus 26, verse 31. You shall make a veil of blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twine linen. It shall be made with cherubim skillfully worked into it. And you shall hang it on four pillars of acacia overlaid with gold and hooks of gold on four bases of silver. And you shall hang the veil from these clasps and bring the Ark of the Covenant in there within the veil. And the veil shall separate for you the holy place from the most holy. You shall put the mercy seat on the Ark of the Testimony in the most holy place. And you shall set the table outside the veil and the lampstand on the south side of the tabernacle, opposite of the table. And you shall put the table on the north side. Here God gives them extremely detailed specifications about the nature of this veil. I want us to just visualize this, okay? Let's work through this together. Verse 31. You shall make a veil of blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twine linen. It shall be made with cherubim skillfully worked into it. So here's the image. The image is you have a veil that is blue and purple and what is the one other color? It is blue and purple and scarlet. Thank you. Blue and purple and scarlet. But then into it you have cherubim that are interwoven. Now exactly what a cherubim is, we don't know. Many have guessed that a cherubim is a type of angel. Maybe. We just know it is some type of heavenly host. You find it in Isaiah chapter 6, for example, with Isaiah's great vision. But the idea is you have this great heavenly being etched into it, or y'all know my knitting terms, woven into it. And then it is scarlet and blue and purple. Now here is what history tells us. The curtain was 60 foot by 30 foot by a palm's thickness. This thing is huge. It supposedly took 300 priests to move the veil of the temple. So whenever we're talking about the veil here, this is a massive object. 60 foot by 30 foot by a palm's hand thickness. So this is not just, you know, a bridal veil. That's how I'd often thought of this in my life. A bridal veil where you can still see the bride's face. And, you know, it's just beautiful, elegant thing that flows behind her. That's not this type of veil at all. This is a massive well of veil that actually is 60 foot by 30 foot by a palm's thickness. And then, of course, the colors of it are blue and purple and scarlet with the cherubim into it. And then you get into verse 32. You shall hang it on four pillars of acacia overlaid with gold, with hooks of gold on four bases of silver. It's a very elegant theme. Verse 33, you shall hang the veil from the clasp and bring the Ark of the Covenant in there with the veil. Now, here's where I want us to make very, very, very close attention. Here at the veil, you take the Ark and you put it inside the veil into the most holy place. So as you visualize the tabernacle, there was, of course, the outer area, the holy place, and then the most holy place. The veil is what separates the holy place from the most holy place. And in the most holy place, that's where you put the tabernacle. And the tabernacle, you'll remember, especially on the mercy seat, the significance of that is God says, there on the mercy seat is where I will meet you. That's, I believe, 25:33, where it says that. And here you have the idea that God is going to rest on the mercy seat on the ark in the most holy place, hidden behind the veil. Well, what then is the purpose of the veil? The purpose of the veil is to show exactly nobody's getting into it. Nobody is just wandering into the most holy place. No one is just going to wander into it. You remember what happened with Nadab and Abihu? They encroached upon the glory of God. That's really their real problem. They encroached upon the glory of God and they died. Moses in Exodus chapter 40 is not able to enter the most holy place because of impurity. You're not just able to just wander into it. Rather, what we find in Leviticus chapter 16 is the high priest is the only individual who's going to be able to enter. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 16. Leviticus 16, y'all know, is the highlight, the climax of the book of Leviticus. It deals with the Day of Atonement. 1 through 16, you become holy. Here in Leviticus 16, we're dealing with the Day of Atonement. And the veil is going to be critical to understanding some of these events. Leviticus 16, verse 1. Yahweh spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they drew near before Yahweh and died. And Yahweh said to Moses, tell Aaron your brother not to come at any time into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat that is on the ark, so that he may not die. For I will appear in the cloud over the mercy seat. So again, let's notice. Aaron, if you go inside my mercy seat, if you go inside the veil, you're going to die. Why? Because that's where the glory of God rested. And as we've seen various times throughout this Mosaic narrative, if you ever encroach upon the glory of God, you die. Man cannot encroach upon the glory of God without consequence. It is only if man first meets the conditions of holiness that then he has access to the mercy seat of God. But here again, tell Aaron not to go or he's going to die. Now, Aaron is going to be able to enter at a specific time. When is Aaron going to be able to go beyond the veil? Let's go down to verse 15. Chapter 16, verse 15. Then Aaron shall kill the goat of the sin offering that is for the people and bring its blood inside the veil and do with its blood as he did with the blood of the bull, sprinkling it over the mercy seat and in front of the mercy seat. He shall make atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the people of Israel and because of the transgressions, all their sins. And so he shall do in the tent of meeting, which dwells in them in the midst of their uncleanness. What here is Aaron doing? Aaron is only able to go beyond the veil if he has blood. So the idea here is the sin offering. You remember with me the sin offering. The sin offering is for specific sin, normally of a goat. So here you have a specific sin committed. Aaron is going to make atonement for that specific sin with the sin offering, take the blood of that animal, and then go beyond the veil, beyond the curtain, so that he make atonement for it. But even Aaron cannot just wander into the mercy seat. Even Aaron cannot just happen to stumble upon the veil. Aaron's warned, Aaron, if you do this on any day but the Day of Atonement, if you do this in any way but bringing the blood of the sin offering, if you do this in any way but the very specific way I give you, you're going to die. And it doesn't seem, as a note with this, no one but Aaron is able to go beyond the veil. Only Aaron and the high priest on this one occasion with the sin offering is able to go beyond the veil. What's the significance? You don't just wander upon God. You do not just happen to have fellowship with God. You do not have an association with God. God is holy. He is separate. That veil is the symbolic signifier. The veil is the signifier of the holiness of God. And then a bit later in Israelite history, you get to 2 Chronicles chapter 3. Here in 2 Chronicles chapter 3, Solomon is going to be building the temple for God, and we'll see the curtain again. Second Chronicles chapter 3, verse 1. 2 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 1. Then Solomon began to build the house of Yahweh in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where Yahweh had appeared to David his father at the place that David had appointed on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. He began to build in the second year of the month of the fourth year of his reign. So here Solomon is building the temple. Down to verse 14. Down to verse 14. And he made the veil of blue and purple and crimson fabric and fine linen, and he worked the cherubim on it. What does Solomon do? As Solomon goes to make the aspects of the holy place, which is given a few verses before this, beginning in verse 10, Solomon is going to make this according to the pattern of Moses. So here, when Solomon himself is having built the veil of God that is going to rest in the temple, he does it according to the specifications of Moses. But again, what's the significance? Not even Solomon, the great king, the son of David, can go into the most holy place. Not even Solomon, the son of the anointed one of Israel, can go into the holy place. God is holy. God is separate. Now, as we think through this and we move forward then to the New Testament, it tells us, and again in Matthew 27:51, the curtain or the veil was torn in two. So let's think through this for a second. If you were an Israelite, what did that veil mean to you? That veil did not signify, first of all, the old covenant. That veil did not signify the covenant that God had made with Israel. The veil signified the holiness of God. The veil signified the sanctified nature of God. It signified the innate glory of God. It signified the awesome holiness of God. And it signified God is holy from man. Man does just not happen upon God. Man cannot even approach God. Not even the anointed high priest can just wander into fellowship with God. God is holy. God is holy. But then you get to Jesus. When Jesus dies, this great curtain, that again was 60 foot by 30 foot by a palm's thickness and took a few hundred priests to move, is torn from top to bottom. Well, I think even without going to the book of Hebrews, we can deduce what this means. This separator, the veil that separated man from God, is now gone. Man now has access to God. That's the significance of the tearing of the veil. It signifies man can now have fellowship with God through Jesus Christ. Now, when we consider this, let's go to the book of Hebrews. Hebrews explicitly explains this event to us. Let's begin in Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19. We have this as a sure and steadfast anchor of the soul, a hope that enters into the inner place behind the curtain. Again, notice that idea there. We have this hope that enters into the holy place behind the curtain where Jesus has gone, a forerunner on our behalf, having become a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. What's the idea here? The curtain's gone. Man can now have fellowship with God through Jesus Christ. Over to chapter 9, verse 3. Chapter 9, verse 3. Again, behind the second curtain was a second section called the Most Holy Place. And it tells us there exactly what's inside it in the following verses. But let's go down to verse 11. When Christ appeared as high priest of the good things that have come, then through the greater and more perfect tent, not made with hands, that is, not of this creation, he entered once for all into the holy places, not by means of blood and goats and calves, but by means of his own blood, thus securing eternal redemption. Brethren, again, think through this. What does that mean? Only under the old covenant could the high priest enter the holy place through the veil with blood. What then has Christ done? Christ has gone beyond the curtain through his blood. What then has his blood done? Down to verse 13. For at the blood of bulls and goats and the sprinkling of defiled persons with the ashes of a heifer, sanctified for the purification of the flesh, how much more will the blood of Christ, who through eternal spirit offered himself without blemish to God, purify our conscience from dead works to serve the living God? Because we now have true sanctification, we now have true forgiveness, we now have the true form of purification, we now have access to God. So here's the idea. Christ has gone beyond the curtain. Because Christ has gone beyond the curtain, we can likewise go beyond the curtain. Over to chapter 10 of the book of Hebrews. Over to chapter 10. Again, I want us to consider, Christ has gone beyond the curtain, and for this reason, we can likewise follow him beyond the curtain or beyond the veil by means of his own flesh. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 19. Therefore, brothers, since we have confidence to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus, what does that mean? We can now go beyond the veil. We can go beyond the curtain. The blood of Christ took away that separator. The blood of Christ took away the separator between man and God. And we can now go, verse 20, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain, that is through his flesh. And since we have a great high priest over the house of Israel. Look at verse 20 again. We now have a new and living way. Contrast that. The old covenant was an old and dying way. But now through Jesus we have a new and living way that he opened through us through the curtain. That is through his flesh. Ah. Now here's the idea. What then is the gateway for us to get to God? What is the gateway for us to get to him? Through his flesh. Now for us, the true form of this reality, that's what the book of Hebrews is all about. It is showing us the true form of reality. What the book of Hebrews is showing us is we now have access to God. So whenever Christ tore the temple and tore the veil of the temple in two, the temple will be torn in two a few years later, but 80-70 joke. When you get to, thanks Randy, whenever you get to, when you get to the tearing of the veil, what does that mean? The thing that separated man from God is now gone. We can now all have access to the glory and the holiness in the very nature of God through Jesus Christ. That's what that means. So before we close, I want to do ask this question then. If this is what this actually means, where did this idea of the tearing of the old covenant come in? I did some research into this, and I'm still not sure. But this is the only verse that I found that I really found to be used in this context. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 2. Ephesians chapter 2. As I went through old commentaries, I got out some of my old commentaries on the book of Matthew from some of the early restoration preachers. And this is the verse that seemed to keep popping up time after time. Let's look at Ephesians 2, verse 14. Ephesians 2, verse 14. Christ is our peace, who has made us both one and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility, by abolishing the law of commandments expressed in ordinances, that he might create in himself one new man in place of the two, so making peace, and might reconcile to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. Here in verse 14, when it says that Christ broke down the dividing wall of hostility, is that dividing wall of hostility referring to the curtain? No, absolutely not. The dividing wall of hostility is not the curtain. That is a misunderstanding of the old law, and I think this is what this ultimately gets down to. It's a misunderstanding of the old law. The old law did not put hostility between God and his people. The old law provided God's people a way to him. We do not need to think of the old law as a law of hostility. It was, albeit an imperfect law, and a finite, but it was a means of access for man to get to God. The veil showed God is truly holy. The true way to God, the true way to access to God, is now only through the blood of Christ. There was a partial way to get to God, but the true way to get to God is through Jesus Christ. What then in verse 14 is this dividing wall of hostility? Verse 15, by abolishing the law of commandments expressed in ordinances, that he might create in himself a new man in the place of two, so making peace. What is this two? The two he's talking about is Jew and Gentile. He's talking about the hostility that was between the Jew and Gentile. This hostility did not come from God, but Christ took away the divider between Jew and Gentile, so that in himself he might make one body. He might make one people. God had in the old covenant sanctified his people. He had set apart Israel as a special nation. The Gentiles were separate. But now Christ has broken down the hostility and in himself has made one nation, one people, one holy race that are saved by his blood. But brethren, let us not think that the veil was a wall of hostility. It was a way to get to God. It was an imperfect way, but it was a way to get to God. And thanks be to our holy God that we now have a living and active way. So what then is the meaning of the tearing of the veil or curtain? Ultimately, I think it's simple. The blood of Christ gives us access to God. That's what it really means. It doesn't have anything to do with the nature of the covenants. It doesn't have to do even with the changing of it. It really means we now have a true way to access our holy God. Get out your songbooks, please. So I hope that's cleared up, perhaps, what the meaning of that is. As I went through that, a lesson for me, at least in this, and this is a somewhat peripheral to the lesson tonight, is just being careful with our Bible study. I had perhaps even parroted this from the pulpit many, many times about, you know, whenever the veil was torn in two, it signified the old covenant being torn asunder. And then when I went to the book of Hebrews and saw that the Hebrew writer tells us the significance of it, it made me realize, man, I just hadn't really put these pieces together. And I think that's just an important lesson for us, that we need to be the wise man who reads the Bible introspectively, seeking to really see what the truth of these matters are. But I will say back to the lesson, thanks be to our holy God that Jesus Christ has torn apart that veil. Because Jesus, through his perfect blood, has now taken his blood and he's gone into the holy place. And this is really, really cool. As you get to Hebrews chapter 8 through 10, what he does in Hebrews chapter 8 through 10, y'all give me a minute, we have to go through this. You get to Hebrews chapter 8 through 10, the whole point of those three chapters is to show that the tabernacle was patterned after heaven itself. So what Christ has done is, under the old covenant, the high priest would enter into the most holy place through the veil. What Christ has done, Christ has now entered into the very presence of God, into heaven itself. So because Christ, through his perfect blood, has gone into the very presence of God, into the true form of the holy place, we likewise can follow him through his blood, and we can then have access to God. You remember the Passover? If you take the blood and you put it on it, on the doorpost, then God will pass over you. If we are covered in the blood of Christ, as graphic as that is, if we're covered in the blood of Christ, we then will have access to the true Father, to the true presence of him after we die. And isn't the gospel an amazing story? I mean, just the more I see God's immense wisdom, that he was always preparing a way, he was always preparing a plan to get his people to him. Oh, we serve an awesome God. Maybe you need to come to that, to our God, to my God, not the God or a God, but my God, the God, this very evening. You need to put off sin, and you need in the waters of baptism to be washed with the water through the blood of Christ. Come forward while we stand and sing. When we walk with